Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, July the 5th. Nice to have you with us. Hope you had a nice holiday yesterday. I had an unusual one, which included going to Michael Moore's new film, Sicko, which makes a case for universal health care in the United States. We will talk with a critic of the film this hour, not necessarily from a cinematic standpoint, but from a health care policy standpoint. He says Sicko unfairly compares the worst of the American health care system with sanitized and glamorized versions of Canada's and Europe's and even Cuba's. And he also says Michael Moore doesn't have all his facts straight. We will welcome your questions for him and your own take on Moore's movie if you saw it. Did you? Did he convince you that the U.S. needs a publicly funded universal health care system or not? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Toll free from anywhere. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Devin Herrick, health economist and senior fellow at the National Center for Policy Analysis in Dallas, Texas. He is author of Lives at Risk, Single-Payer National Health Insurance Around the World. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Thanks very much for being with us. This is a movie, Michael Moore says, not about the 50 million people in this country who don't have health insurance. It's about the 250 million people who do, but find themselves in all sorts of struggles with their health insurance company, getting care denied, in some cases vital care. People dying because they have care denied, and people going bankrupt because the coverage didn't cover them, and all sorts of other nightmares. That's not what the movie was about.
Well, the you know, healthcare is a scarce and valuable resource. So, you know, countries all over the world, all countries where healthcare, you know, have to ration at some point for certain reasons, simply because it is very costly. But I think the show was somewhat one-sided in the sense that it portrayed healthcare as free in these countries. Well, of course, nothing is free, and that it's readily accessible with no barriers, and that healthcare in largely is hard to obtain in the U.S. I think that's not really a mischaracterization.
Yeah. So, what bones do you have to pick with the examples that Michael Moore used in his film of all these people who were going bankrupt or getting sicker or not getting the care they needed from the insurance coverage that they had?
Well, for example, there was an anecdote with the widow of a gentleman who died of renal cell carcinoma. His name was Tracy Pierce, and they had talked about a bone marrow transplant as a procedure that their insurance company refused to cover. Well, what was never really discussed is this isn't, I mean, it was mentioned that the reason why they refused to cover it was because it's experimental, and it is experimental, and I don't know of any insurance company in the U.S. that I can find covers it. Now, I'm sure that the insurance systems in Canada, Britain, and France would not cover it either.
Yeah. What about the couple who needed a cochlear implant for their deaf child, and one was approved by the insurance company, but a second was not because a second one would be experimental?
Well, that would depend on that would vary from insurance to insurance company and depending on state laws. Now, I can't speak whether or not they would cover two in Britain or, you know, Canada and France, but I suspect that by and large, the socialized systems in these countries tend to spend less on extreme health care treatments than we do in our country.
Yeah. What about the woman who was diagnosed with cervical cancer, but her insurance company told her that she was too young to be diagnosed with cervical cancer and wasn't going to approve her treatment, so she went to Canada?
Well, I was wondering about how she got cervical cancer at such a young age, but I still don't think that was, I mean, I can't imagine an insurance company saying, we think you're too young, you cannot, I mean, we're not willing to treat that. There had to be some mitigating circumstances. I mean, if you're 22 years old with a heart attack, obviously you're having a heart attack. So, you know, I know lots of people with health insurance, and rarely do I hear, you know, people having trouble getting catastrophic care.
Yeah. Well, you can get the catastrophic care, but you have to end up paying for much of it. The couple that had to move into their daughter's basement because of the dad's heart attacks and the mother's cancer diagnosis had bankrupted them, all the co-pays and such that they had to pay.
Well, that's one thing about the co-payments and cost sharing is, you know, of course, you know, that varies somewhat from insurance to insurance plan. I mean, my insurance plan is the health savings account, and it has a maximum what I can be out. I mean, I can't be out in more than something like $5,500 any given year. And so I think that would be a great idea for people who want to know what the maximum they can be spending out of pocket is. Because, I mean, it does make sense to analyze what type of coverage you have. Simply because healthcare is an important part of our economy and part of our consumption.
Yeah, your main beef with Moore is that he's dwelling on the worst of the U.S. healthcare system and sanitizing or glamorizing the healthcare systems in other countries.
Yeah, I think that is the case. For example, he talks about healthcare is free in Canada, healthcare is free in Great Britain, healthcare is free in France. Well, of course, it's not free. And he kind of glosses over. He mentions, well, they say there's long waiting lists. Of course, then his proof there's not is he goes to the one ER in Canada that does not have a waiting line. But yet, the Fraser Institute or British Columbia quantifies each year for the past 17 years, how many people are waiting for various treatments in Canada. And it's about 771,000 people in 2006. The NHS in Britain has a website that talks about the waiting in Britain. And there's nearly a million people waiting for various forms of treatment.
Yeah, there's people waiting in this country too, though, aren't there?
Well, in this country, it tends to be more of a case of scheduling. I had a health economist from British Columbia asked me if I could take her on a tour of some hospitals in the U.S. She had a grant to study healthcare systems around the world. And so I took her to the charity hospital in Dallas. It's called Parkland Memorial. It's in the free hospital, the county hospital. And we were led on a tour by a resident who is in charge of public relations for people like us. And so the health economist was asking very specific questions. What is the waiting time for a patient to see this specialist? What is the waiting time for this other specialist? And the resident became somewhat embarrassed, and finally the Canadian health economist told her, well, actually, our waiting times for those are much longer. And see, this was the safety net hospital where people without insurance go, yet it was very comparable in many ways to people in Canada just routinely.
We're talking about Michael Moore's new film, Sicko, with a guest who is critical of the healthcare message in the movie. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Good to have you with us. Hope you stay tuned. Ben Marins is with you this afternoon between 4 and 6 for At Issue with Ben Marins. After 5 o'clock, people of all ages, faiths, and backgrounds lead lives full of fear. Sorry about that, but they don't have to. After 5, Ben and his guests will talk about how to save a life, live a life free of fear and anxiety. Boy, could hardly get that one out, but hope you join Ben to hear more about that after 5 o'clock. We're talking with Devin Herrick. He's a health economist and senior fellow at the National Center for Policy Analysis in Dallas, Texas. He is author of Lives at Risk, Single Payer, National Health Insurance Around the World. And he saw Michael Moore's new movie, Sicko. And he says that Michael Moore is not giving you all the facts and that Michael Moore is comparing the worst of America's healthcare system with sanitized versions of Europe's and Canada's and even Cuba's. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. And Devin Herrick, a number of people calling, and this always happens on a controversial issue like this, wanting to know if this National Center for Policy Analysis is a think tank that is funded by the healthcare industry, and that if you are saying what you're saying because your paycheck depends on it.
Well, like all the think tanks, we are funded primarily by foundations. as a matter of fact. I mean, I'm not in the fundraising area, but it's virtually every think tank around has, you know, foundations that fund them, you know, for foundations that share their mission. So no, if saying things just because my paycheck depended on it, I could find a much bigger paycheck by working in the private sector instead of for a nonprofit.
Yeah. Your mission is to what?
Oh, of course, we're a public policy research institute, and we look for, you know, private sector solutions for public policy problems. In other words, we're a think tank that looks for free market, you know, alternatives to government, you know, control and command and control.
Yeah. You wrote a book that obviously I haven't had a chance to read, but it is obviously critical of single-payer health insurance around the world because the title of it is Lives at Risk. You think that single-payer health insurance is putting our lives at risk?
Well, the national health insurance systems have, you know, what's known as the politics of medicine. That is, when politicians control the healthcare dollars, of course, they want to maximize votes. Well, how do you maximize votes? Well, you do that by spreading the dollars to the broadest amount of people, which primarily is those that are healthy, as opposed to intense spending money on those that are intensely sick, because that's not as many votes. So you tend to overprovide care for those that are healthy, and you unprovide those that are desperately ill. And that's just a tenet of all systems where the government controls the funds.
Earlier, you did make a reference that this government-run or taxpayer-funded healthcare was socialist. Is it really socialist? Don't we, as Michael Moore pointed out in the movie, do this with our public schools and our police and fire departments and such?
Well, from an economic standpoint, of course, I'm an economist, the things that government tends to fund are those things that are commonly referred to as public goods. And a great example that is always used is national defense. And, of course, then police and fire would fall into that. And that is those types of activities that would be underprovided if you were to depend on the private sector to pay for them. And the reason is because if I'm paying individually for, you know, police protection, my neighbors would also get the benefit of that, but they wouldn't have to necessarily pay. So because of market failure, the government steps in and says, okay, we will tax and provide police protection. But those types of activities that are known as, what's known as non-rival, non-exclusive. In other words, I can benefit free ride on someone else's military or police protection. Well, in healthcare, you know, it does not really fall into that category in terms of, if I'm paying for health care, I can easily pay for my own health care, whereas it's not a classic public good from the standpoint that there is market failure necessarily.
Yeah, but a lot of us can't apparently pay for our health care, given all of the problems that we hear about, like in Michael Moore's movie. People aren't able to pay for their health care.
Well, I think the part of the problem, and I'm not here to say our healthcare system is wonderful. I'm the first one to agree it's sick and in bad need of reform. So it's just we would disagree on, you know, what the best route of reform would be. Michael Moore would take us, you know, all the way to a universal, you know, national health insurance system funded by taxpayers, where I would want to go, you know, farther back to a free market where we actually do have price transparency and we have competition. We don't have competition right now. We don't have a market that's functioning in terms of health care. And so a lot of the people, I mean, for example, in the movie, of course, you recall one man had a couple of fingers severed and he went to the hospital and they said, okay, you can pick one finger for $12,000 or the other one for $60,000. Well, why did they quote an outrageous, ridiculous price like $60,000? It's because prices have ceased to mean anything in our healthcare system because nobody pays directly. We always pay through health insurance. Well, we need an actual market under a real market. They would have quoted him a price that would bear some resemblance of cost. So that's part of the problem. That's why people can't afford health insurance, because they're paying retail when they go to the hospital.
Let's take calls. David in Fort Atkinson is first. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hi, Julie. Good morning to your guests as well.
Oh, hi, David.
I just wanted to call more with a comment than anything else. on these kinds of subjects, when we're dealing with reform of the American healthcare system, inevitably somebody brings up the Canadian system and how it's a model that we should look to, et cetera, et cetera. I am a Canadian. I'm a Canadian living here in the United States on a green card, and I have for a large portion of my life lived under the Canadian healthcare system. Not only that, but my mother is a nurse in Canada. She has been a nurse for 40 years. And I can tell you that the things that you hear about the Canadian health system and how it's such a wonderful model that we ought to look to is just a bunch of bunk. Routinely, there are waiting lists, incompetent doctors, understaffed offices, cost overruns, payments that aren't made. Every time I call my mother just to say hi, find out how she's doing, just like you do, you know, we talk about business and whatever, and she tells me the latest horror stories that are going on that she sees every single day, not as a matter of exception, but just as a matter of the normal course of the way things work. So I think that we need to not look at, frankly, propagandists like Michael Moore, but talk to people who actually live under the system, and you'll find out that, hey, this is no panacea. And finally, yeah. just one other comment. Your guest just mentioned the problem of price transparency here in the United States. Yeah, that's a big problem, and I'm certainly not saying that our system doesn't need reform. But let me just give you an example of something that just recently happened to us. My wife had a sore throat, and she wanted to go in and see the doctor. And I said, well, how much is this going to cost? She said, I don't know. So we called this thing called Priceline, which is part of, I think, Blue Cross Blue Shield, trying to get them to tell us how much an office visit was going to be was like pulling teeth. It was maddening. It was like they did not want to tell us. And finally, my wife said, why is it that we are expected simply to show up at a doctor's office and pay whatever he says to pay without getting up front some sort of estimate as to what we're going to pay?
Two big points there and only a minute before a news break. Devin Herrick, you want to pick whichever one you want to talk about first?
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, the price transparency, the reason why they don't disclose prices because prices cease to mean anything. They have negotiated discounts because you have insurance, and that's really wrong. I mean, in a true competitive market, they would be competing for your business because you controlled the dollars. And the trouble is you don't control the dollars. You've conceded all that control to a third party. And that's a problem. In no other area that we consume would we put up with that. But in healthcare, because third parties have negotiated these discounts and determined what they're willing to pay for, that's what we get. And it's because of the way we pay for healthcare, and that's one of the things that needs to be reformed.
Yeah. Michael Moore did talk to Canadians who were very happy with their healthcare system in the film. What was he lying?
Oh, I'm sure there are Canadians that just love their system. As there are tons of Americans like ours, I think they were fearful of a system that would be more private. Simply because they have, for many years, had a system where they assumed it was free, but of course it's not free.
Let's check news, and then we'll continue talking about Sicko. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine at 7:36 on this Thursday, July the 5th. We're talking with Devin Herrick, health economist and senior fellow at the National Center for Policy Analysis, author of Lives at Risk, Single-Payer National Health Insurance Around the World. And Devin Herrick saw Michael Moore's new movie, Sicko, and says that Michael Moore is not giving us all the facts and that he is unfairly comparing the worst of America's healthcare system with with sanitized and glamorized versions of national health insurance plans in other countries like Canada and Europe. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest. Did you see this movie or not? Do you support the call for universal health care coverage in this country? Publicly funded universal health care coverage. Mark in Romance is our next caller. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
thanks for taking my call. I have yet to see the movie Sicko, but I work in the healthcare business, and my son was living over in Taiwan this past year, and while he was there, he suffered a really serious hand injury, including a severed tendon. And by the time they did all the surgery, pain medication, and rehabilitation, his out-of-pocket costs were $23. The fact of the matter is, our system right now, we have the money to provide the care. The problem is that so much money gets siphoned off into needlessly redundant compensation for this insurance company, that executive, the profit sharing, and so on that goes on. And in a single payer system, you don't have all that duplication. I know in the business I work in, the amount of paperwork that we have to fill out, and the needless hours and hours that goes into filling out various health insurance forms, it's just money that is just hemorrhaging out of the system. Mm-hmm. Medicare, which is you could look at it as a single payer mm-hmm. system. Their overhead, administrative overhead costs are 2 to 3 cents compared to the private insurance industry, which I believe overhead runs around 30-35%. We need to be at a universal health care system. It's just the economics of what we can't continue the way we're going now. The other thing is...
I'm sorry, Mark. We've got so many callers and so many points to cover. Let me get our guest to address that issue, the needless, expensive overhead and bureaucracy of our current system, Devin Herrick.
Oh, there's no denying that we do have way, way too much bureaucracy, paperwork, and overhead. And I think that's largely driven by over-relying on third-party health insurance to pay for just routine day-to-day medical expenses. I mean, pure insurance are those things that we don't really expect to occur. Like, I don't expect to have an accident with my car, so I get insurance to cover me in the event that an unfortunate mishap. But with prepaid health insurance, it becomes very, very costly to administer. I mean, just going to the doctor or getting a simple drug should not involve billing a third party. In my case, I have a health savings account. I just can swipe my debit card, which saves a lot of that, and it is a problem. But the solution, I think, is getting a real market where we control the dollars as opposed to giving all those dollars to someone else who then decides what we get back.
Yeah, yeah. But the health savings account that you have is not going to help that person who's living paycheck to paycheck, Devin Herrick, and paying for the health care that, frankly, at least right now, costs a lot. Like, let's say the woman who needed the inhaler for her respiratory problem has to dish out $120 for one inhaler, and she has to go through a couple a month. How's she going to afford that?
Well, actually, my employer-sponsored health coverage cost about the same that my former PPO plan cost. The difference is half of the money that was going to my old plan, which had a deductible of about $500 to $1,000, now goes for high-deductible health insurance, and the other half of the premium goes into my health savings account. So, I have better coverage, first-dollar coverage, for about what I was spending before. So, and other employees of my firm that might be younger and living paycheck to paycheck actually are better off from the standpoint that, you know, if they save money, they get to keep that money. They can use it for other things if they want to pay taxes on it. But, I mean, they essentially have first-dollar coverage. So it's actually less out-of-pocket spending than under our old plan where you gave more money to the insurance company and then asked for benefits back.
How come Cuba could sell this woman the inhaler for her respiratory problem for 5 cents?
Oh, it's obviously heavily subsidized. The true cost is not 5 cents, even in Cuba. And of course, it's not clear to me how much of that was public relations, because mm-hmm. I was on an interview a couple of days ago, and a lady from Cuba called in and had all kinds of bad things to say about the Cuban system, including mm-hmm. bringing your own soap and linen and so forth, and not being able to find medications. But if the cost of the first pill, for example, we talk about high dollars, you know, the cost for drugs. Well, the first pill might cost $800 million. The second, of course, you can stamp out for, you know, a penny. So it might be that they may be you know, using generic medications, or they may be manufacturing and heavily subsidizing those.
Laura in Madison, hi, you're on the air.
Well, I do agree with your guest on one point, and that is that this to solve the solution by an anecdotal means, such as in the film Sicko, or a lot of anecdotes that I've been hearing about Canadian systems versus United States, etc. I mean, you're always going to hear the horror stories. The thing that we need is a critical analysis of the facts. And the facts just stare us in the face. We pay the highest amount for health care, and our life expectancy is nowhere near the top. But our infant mortality is, and our death rates of our younger folks are. We have rampant obesity. The number of people who think that it's time for change of health care in the United States, that's very high. Let's look at the facts. Let's take a critical analysis of it. I think that people are going to be moved by Sicko, and I think that's a good thing because I think it is time for a change.
Yeah, he does. Sicko does point out that the life expectancy in this country is lower than the countries that have the national health insurance, and also the infant mortality rate is higher. What does that tell you, Devin Herrick?
It's not clear to me that a national health insurance system has really much they can do about, you know, behavioral issues. For example, we are a wealthier society, which explains why we tend to be more obese. We have very efficient food distribution systems that make fast food and food very, very economically and very cheap. And, you know, in health economics, we say from half to two-thirds of medical expenses are indirectly related to behavior. And, you know, we're an independent bunch of people in the U.S. We figure it's our right to overeat, to drink to excess, to take risky behaviors. And granted, I wish we would look toward more prevention, but believe it or not, a lot of prevention are things that are almost free. It's watching your weight, exercise, watching your diet, and leading healthy lifestyles. But it's not clear how a national health insurance system can actually influence our behavior to do that.
Deborah in Waukegan, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I have kind of three quick points to make, if I could. I mean, first of all, I think when people talk about the Canadian system, it's not a unitary system. They're different systems in different provinces, so I think the responses are skewed. Secondly, I think one of the things that I think doesn't work there is that they don't have a Harley Street. They don't have a private alternative, and I don't know why they decided that. But my husband's family is in England. They have many different circumstances. They're very, very happy with the system. I mean, they haven't had one complaint, and they've had huge expenses in some cases. My third point is, how are we ever going to get an objective view of this? It's a very complex problem. We have aging populations. I don't think it's going to be easy to solve the problem anywhere in the world, but it's critical to get an objective analysis, and I really wonder where that's possible when there are so many vested interests involved, when so many people's jobs depend upon the advertising industry, the health insurance industry. I mean, it's something that cries out for a solution, but I really don't know where there's an objective voice to be heard.
Yeah, thank you, Deborah. I'm going to get our guest to respond to your questions or comments after our weather break, talking with Devin Herrick, author of Lives at Risk, Single-Payer National Health Insurance Around the World, and a critic of Michael Moore's new movie, Sicko. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Stay tuned. Coming up, according to a new study, eldest children, or firstborns, have higher IQs than subsequent siblings. Coming up after 8, I'll talk with a guest who says what really matters is family size, time and attention, and financial resources available for the child, and we'll talk with him coming up after 8 o'clock. We're talking with a guest who is a critic of Michael Moore's new movie, Sicko, Devin Herrick. He's a health economist and senior fellow at the National Center for Policy Analysis. And Devin Herrick, we just heard from Deborah before the weather break who had three different points, saying that we really can't say Canada has this one system, that it has different systems in different provinces and experiences as to whether there are waiting lists or like or dislike of the system depend province to province. Do you agree with that?
Oh, I think there's no question about that. If you look at the provinces, the waiting time for various procedures varies from province to province. It, for example, takes on average about 10 weeks to get an MRI across Canada, but it can be almost double that in, or 50% longer than that in, like, Newfoundland, for example. The rural areas tend to be to have less coverage or less specialists, and that's true in the U.S. Mm-hmm. and I'm sure everywhere else in the world. As far as the Britain's healthcare system, they have what's known or what's sometimes called in the press as the postcode lottery, and that refers to the fact that each healthcare system or each local healthcare area, they have different resources. They have a global budget. And, for example, if you get cancer in one area, you may not have the same quality of medications that someone else across in another healthcare area. And so I think that's true. I mean, obviously, you might like your system better if you're in one of the systems that has more resources.
Yeah. And in England, there is the publicly funded healthcare, but there is a private component.
Well, that is correct. Canada has what's known as single payer, which means the government actually has a monopoly. It's like almost like a monopoly health insurance where you cannot go outside the system and you cannot pay privately for health care that is funded publicly, that is available mm-hmm. publicly. Whereas in Britain, they have a dual system whereby you can have private insurance, and many people do have private insurance. And in fact, the British NHS, which is the national health insurance or health care system, they in fact are the largest provider of private care in Britain. About a quarter of their capacity is actually used for cash paying private patients, and the other three quarters is the public sector treating. In other words, you can actually pay to jump the queue in that case.
Yeah. And then Deborah was bemoaning that are we ever going to get an objective analysis of this entire issue? Everyone has a special interest or a vested interest, and she's concerned that there's no way to get objective information on this.
Well, of course, there are people that believe, I mean, think tanks, institutes that are in favor of going more toward a universal, publicly funded healthcare system, and of course, we are in favor of a private system. So, from that standpoint, you do have, and moderate people, mm-hmm. centrist organizations, so you do have, that discourse. But I think one of your previous callers noted that analysis by anecdote really is not that objective. But she's right. We do need, to really discuss the facts. And there are a lot of special interest. For example, going back 40 years, poll after poll has shown that people tend to favor, or at least say they're in favor of universal health care. But when they realize that they may have to give, their private insurance mm-hmm. away, that's when they tend to back up and say, oh, hold on.
Yeah, but I've seen some recent polls, and I'm looking for them now, where they have said, we think that everybody should have access and coverage, health care coverage, and we are willing to pay more taxes in order for this to occur.
They've been saying that for about 40 years, though. But that's what's known as stated preference. Revealed preference involves in, well, are you really willing to back that up with a vote? And when it comes to the voting booth in recent years, they tend to shy away from that.
Yeah, maybe because, as Michael Moore pointed out in the movie, there have been a lot of, what as he put it, scare campaigns that somehow if we had this in this country, you wouldn't be able to go to the doctor you wanted to go to or whatever the case may be, that opponents of single payer scare us away from it by telling us things that aren't necessarily true.
Well, I don't think you can. I don't think all the public relations in the world will scare people away if they like what they have. And what they have is they call their doctor, they go see their doctor, and they have an employer-sponsored plan that they don't want to give up. So I think it's fear of the unknown, and although they know our healthcare system needs reform, they tend to like what they have in many cases.
Yeah. Tony in Brookfield is next. Hi, Tony. You're on the air.
Hi. My question is in terms of a dual system. I think you just spoke about it in reference with England, but I'm curious because it seems that the problem is with people who are able to afford a good healthcare plan through their employer, this universal healthcare system wouldn't be advantageous for them. While, you know, people such as Michael Moore and advocates of SICKO would support a universal healthcare system because it really helps those who don't have enough money to have a good healthcare plan. So why can't there be a dual system in which those who have enough money or would like to choose their own healthcare system or plan are able to, and those who are of low income will still be covered by the government and will still be able to get those services. Maybe not as selective as somebody who has a higher income, but still would be able to meet their needs.
Devin Herrick.
Well, isn't that what we kind of have now? We have, you know, of course, Medicaid for the low income. We have SCHIP for children that are a little bit higher income, you know, too rich for Medicaid. We have a variety. Of course, we're a multi-payer system. Of course, we have Medicare for senior citizens, and then among the working age population, insurance can vary from company to company, and an employer tends to provide the type of benefits their workers are willing to pay for in foregone wages. In other words, it's just part of your pay. If you're in a low-wage industry, you don't see as much health insurance because the workers are not willing to, you know, put out the cost, whereas in high-wage industries, you see very lavish health plans because it's tax-free. And so I think we have that. Of course, we still need to reform because we are over-relying on insurance for trivial things and creating all kinds of paperwork and not really having the benefit of a competitive market.
Bill in Milwaukee is with us now. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks, Joy. See, the reason I'm calling is I work in healthcare for people who are not having access to care. I look at their faces every day. So I know that people such as economists who are in privileged positions tend to talk in terms of price transparency, health savings accounts that may cost $5,000. $5,000 for the people that I see is maybe half their annual income. Often examples of public hospitals such as Parkland are given as proof that our system works. But in fact, in Wisconsin, we have no Parkland. We have no public hospitals that are available for people in poverty. So to give that kind of an example is really just as false as Michael Moore's examples. What's important is is to be able to have the kind of access as a matter of policy, not as a matter of privilege.
Devin Herrick?
Well, one thing that's important is yes, the system does vary from state to state. But what I think what states really need is the flexibility to decide how to allocate their federal funds. For example, the Medicaid funds that the government pays that, you know, that are usually matching grants. One state might choose to fund or should be able to choose to fund or subsidize charity care hospitals, whereas other states, for example, Massachusetts, are looking at using some of their federal funds to subsidize health insurance for those who cannot afford it. I don't think there is a one-size-fits-all solution for all 50 states. I think there needs to be 50 unique solutions for 50 states. And I think states need the flexibility to decide how to allocate their charity care funds, whether it be for private insurance or for a Parkland type of charity care facility.
And David in Madison, hi, you're on the air.
I wanted to ask if you can help us understand why there, if we have a standoff between like the private sector and the public sector, why there couldn't be a hybrid sort of plan that perhaps would be regulated or run by the government, but that would, if it was available for everyone, wouldn't that be a pro-business decision in the sense that there'd be healthcare, private sector healthcare would have a greater population to serve, and therefore that would be their business would grow because more people could access health care.
Well, there are those that that propose a similar idea. For example, the Heritage Foundation has long been a proponent of having a federal health care type system, the FEHBP, available to individuals. And I think some of the presidential candidates have suggested a similar idea with a dual parallel system. I guess my fear of having the government offer a health insurance would be that over time it would tend to, you know, it would get political. You would have politicians with under increasing pressure to have higher and higher subsidies such that pretty soon you would have the government plan being subsidized and the private plans basically looking out of business because they're expected to operate in a private market. And I think there'd be crowd out where pretty soon you'd have just be left with the government plan, which case could then do what it wanted to do, and including cutting back on services and so forth.
We have less than a minute to go. Do you expect that the sicko movie will reignite the healthcare debate in this country?
Well, it's already reigniting the debate. I mean, I'm being on the air with you today is proof of that. I've done several other interviews over the last week or so, and I've read numerous reviews and numerous articles, critical or are in agreement. So obviously, we have the debate's already going.
And did you think that the change that Michael Moore wants is on the way?
Well, it's hard to say. Poll after poll says one thing, but people tend to back away whenever they think they're going to have to give up their cherished position.
Yeah, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Devin Herrick, author of Lives at Risk, Single-Payer National Health Insurance Around the World. Thanks to Karen Prager and Christina Taylor for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.